This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Energy's News. I'm Laura McCulloch. Coming up on today's programme, an agreement has been rejected between university officials and lecturer leaders over their pension dispute. A lecturer explains how this situation could be avoided in future.
I think what most people feel is very important is that the methods and the procedures that led us to this dispute are reviewed and changed. There was a great deal of a lack of transparency and a lack of procedural fairness about how these decisions were arrived at.
Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, has delivered his spring statement from the House of Commons this afternoon. Before giving the latest economic growth and borrowing forecast figures, he highlighted the government's financial achievements.
Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to introduce to the House the first spring statement. The UK was the only major economy to make hundreds of tax and spending changes twice a year, and major international organisations and UK professional bodies alike have been pressing for change.
President Donald Trump has fired his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. The Edinburgh Zoo's giant panda breeding programme has been suspended for at least a year because of their failure to produce cubs. An animal welfare charity argues why this programme should stop.
Yeah, one kind is hoping that this isn't just going to be a temporary measure and that it will actually be halted for good. There's been several failed attempts now to breed the pandas at Edinburgh Zoo, and we think it's time that she should just be left in peace and be left alone for the rest of their time in Edinburgh.
With the latest updates on other news stories today, here is Oni McFadden.
Two of John Warboys' rape victims will begin a High Court challenge against the decision to release Warboys from prison after serving only 9 years of an indefinite sentence. The victims fear for their safety if Warboy is released and say they were not informed of the decision to release him before it was reported in the media. Warboys was convicted in 2009 for sexually assaulting 12 women while working in London as a black cab driver, although it's thought he carried out over 100 attacks between 2002 and 2008. London Mayor Sadiq Khan has supported the fight against his release by launching a judicial review into the decision. High Court judges will hear evidence from both the victims and Mr Khan during the trial. One of the victims, believed to be Warboys' first, spoke this morning before the High Court challenge.
Somebody has made a massive mistake. He has not changed. He is still going to reoffend, and we need to get that overturned. Even one rape, 8 years isn't enough. I've suffered with this for 15 years. I don't get a parole. I don't get somebody to say to me all of a sudden, you've served your time, you can get on with your life now.
22 years on from the Dunblane shooting, which remains the most deadly firearm attack in UK history, survivors and families of the victims will light candles tonight to remember their loved ones and also to honour the 17 victims of the Parkland shooting last month. 10 survivors and family members have recorded a video message called Dunblane Stands with Parkland, along with a letter sent to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School to show their solidarity.
We want you to know that change can happen.
It won't be easy, but continue to remind everybody of what happened at your school and the devastation that can be caused by just one person and just one legally owned gun. Never let anyone forget.
A court date has been set for a man who admitted to killing a young girl in Aberdeen last November. Mark Bruce strangled Chloe Mizek during sex after the pair met at a bus stop. She was found in flats in the Rosemont Viaduct area of Aberdeen. Bruce admitted to culpable homicide, but his sentence was deferred. He will appear at the High Court in Edinburgh next month. A tram has collided with a car on Edinburgh's Princes Street this morning at 9:20 a.m. The junction at Charlotte Square. An investigation has been launched into the collision, but no injuries have been reported. A trial scheme was set to begin today, offering rail cards to 26 to 30-year-olds across the country at £30 per card, offering one-third off train journeys. There were only 10,000 cards available in the trial, and they were to be sold on a online on a first-come, first-served basis. However, the site received 12 times as many visitors as normal within the first couple of hours, causing it to crash, meaning people were unable to purchase the discount cards. In international news, US House of Representatives Intelligence Committee has today ruled that there was no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign in the 2016 presidential election. The committee, led by Mike Conaway, has agreed with US intelligence agencies that there was Russian interference in the election, but has said there is no evidence that this benefited Mr. Trump. The House panel is the first of several investigators to release its findings, with inquiries by Special Counsel Robert Mueller and Senate Intelligence Committee into the alleged contact between the Kremlin and Mr. Trump still ongoing. A plane crash in Nepal has killed 49 people yesterday. The US Bengala aeroplane, which veered off the runway on approach to Kathmandu Airport, was carrying 71 people, with a further 22 injured in hospital, some in serious condition. The cause of the crash, as of yet, is still unknown. However, the airline has blamed air traffic control for the accident, whilst the airport have said the plane approached from the wrong direction. Nepalese Prime Minister KP Sharma Oli has said there will be an immediate investigation. Former Nazi SS guard Oskar Gröning, who is known as the bookkeeper of Auschwitz, has died aged 96 in hospital. Gröning, who reportedly died on Friday, had been sentenced to 4 years imprisonment for accessory to the murder of 300,000 people at the concentration camp in Nazi-occupied Poland. The pensioner was deemed fit for prison by a court doctor, but his jail term was repeatedly delayed due to poor health. Palestinian Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah has been declared safe after an explosion struck his convoy during a visit to Gaza earlier today. The seemingly targeted explosion is suspected to have been an assassination attempt. The Palestinian authorities have accused Gaza militants of trying to kill the PM. The explosion caused damage to three vehicles, with signs of blood on the doors being reported. A 17-year-old boy has been killed and a 75-year-old woman injured after two parcel bombs exploded in Houston, Texas on Monday. The police believe these explosions are linked to a similar parcel bomb which killed a 39-year-old man in the Texas capital less than a fortnight ago. Police are yet to determine a motive, but have suggested that it may be racially motivated, as both male victims are black and the female Hispanic. On Monday, Austin police said they suspected the death earlier in the month, initially treated as a suspicious death, was linked to Monday's incident. Both are now being investigated as homicides.
What we understand at this point is that early this morning, one of the residents went out front and there was a package on the front doorstep. They brought that package inside the residence, and as they opened that package, both victims were in the kitchen and the package exploded.
Back to you, Laura.
Thank you, Oni. University and college unions representatives met today to discuss the proposal agreed with Universities UK. However, despite the opportunity to compromise, universities across the UK have rejected the offer and expressed their frustration towards the UCU General Secretary Sally Hunt. Our correspondent Sonny Neill reports.
After an agreement over pensions was reached last night between the University and College Union and employers represented by universities in the UK, many UCU branches and individual members have since expressed their opposition to the deal. This morning, over 40 UCU branches representing universities across the country have overwhelmingly rejected the proposals, including key Scottish locations such as Edinburgh, Strathclyde and Aberdeen. We spoke to Professor Philip Cook, a political theorist at Edinburgh University, who led a demonstration in support of continuing the strike due to a widely felt disappointment in the proposed agreement.
Well, I think, like many members of the union, we were disappointed with a number of things in the agreement. We all wanted better results from these rounds of talks. I suppose we all feel happy that there were talks taking place, because that was one of the reasons for the strike, is the talks had been terminated. So the very fact that there is some kind of agreement, I suppose, is to be welcomed, and there is some movement from the position we found ourselves in before the strikes took place. I certainly found myself disappointed with the agreement, and I think that's a view sort of shared very widely by academics in the union here at the moment.
Professor Cook went on to explain the need for reform in legislation to prevent similar scenarios from occurring in the future.
The dispute is quite technical. As I understand it, there needs to be a return to the September valuation of the pension scheme. Universities need to agree to take on a slightly higher level of risk. What most people feel is very important is that the methods and the procedures that led us to this dispute are reviewed and changed. There was a great deal of a lack of transparency and a lack of procedural fairness about how these decisions were arrived at. I think that as a sector, we need to really review the way we organise ourselves, the organisation of UUK, how agreements are arrived at with the union. So I think that hopefully that, you know, there will be some fundamental changes to the relationships within the sector that will help us avoid such a really damaging strike for everyone taking place in the future.
Much of the anger expressed this morning has been directed at UCU General Secretary Sally Hunt after she confronted protesters, explaining that despite the number of universities rejecting the compromise, the UCU would back the final outcome from the meeting either way, showing that she was out of touch with the majority of members.
The promise I made at the beginning of this strike to some picketers, which was there will be no decision made without UCU members having the final decision.
We have already voted in massive numbers to strike in favour of DB.
After hours of debate between representatives and a huge movement from protesters across the UK, the UCU took on board how largely unsatisfied the union members were and officially decided this afternoon to reject the proposal. Protests, therefore, will likely carry on into the coming weeks with no end in sight as the unions continue to strike.
Philip Harmon spoke in Parliament earlier this afternoon to deliver the Spring Statement. The statement focused on the growth of the UK economy and predicted falling inflation and borrowing. Our correspondent, Elise Kennedy, reports.
Earlier in Parliament, Philip Hammond, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, delivered the Spring Statement. It was looking at the prediction of the UK economic future. He started off on a positive note, speaking about the fall in national debt.
The first sustained fall in debt in 17 years. Yeah. A turning point in this nation's recovery from the financial crisis of a decade ago. Light at the end of the tunnel.
Due to the economic growth, Hammond has made some claims for the future.
It forecasts more jobs, rising real wages, declining inflation, a falling deficit, and a shrinking debt. The economy grew by 1.7% in 2017, compared to 1.5% forecast at the budget.
There was no major spending announcements made, but suggested that in the autumn budget, if the economy continues to do well, there will be opportunity for more public spending.
In the autumn, the public finances continue to reflect the improvements that today's report hints at. Then, in accordance with our balanced approach and using the flexibility provided by the fiscal rules, I would have capacity to enable further increases in public spending and investment in the years ahead, while continuing to drive value for money to ensure that not a single penny of precious taxpayers' money is wasted.
While the Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, believes that waiting until the next budget to take action will be a mistake on Hammond's part.
Hasn't he listened to the doctors, the nurses, the teachers, the police officers, the carers? And even his own councillors, they're telling him they can't wait for the next budget. They're telling him to act now.
Online reaction from opposition parties hasn't been too flattering. Derek Mackay, an MSP for the SNP party, has tweeted, UK Tory Gov Spring Statement continues austerity by choice, fails to address Brexit threat, does nothing on NHS pay, fails to progress Scottish city deals, confirms low economic growth, then shortchanges Scotland on Brexit monies. Hashtag disappointed, hashtag missed opportunity. While Caroline Lucas, the MP for Brighton Pavilion and co-leader of the Green Party, tweeted, Tories celebrate tiny improvement in growth in today's spring statement, but the GDP isn't a real measure of society. True indicators are people being treated in hospital corridors and food banks use shooting up. Our economy is designed to fail people and it needs an overhaul. But the true telling will come with the autumn budget, when a new public spending announcement will be made.
President Donald Trump fired US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson today in a surprising move. Tillerson has been replaced by former CIA Director Mike Pompeo, and President Trump has said he will feel more confident with Tillerson gone. Ian Leggett has more.
Donald Trump's dismissal of Rex Tillerson may not be a surprise to many. The former Secretary of State and the US President have had a rocky and tense relationship since Mr. Tillerson's appointment in February 2017. They've clashed on key issues such as the Iran deal, NATO funding, and finding a diplomatic solution to improve relations with North Korea. A senior State Department aide has said that Mr. Tillerson was unaware and didn't know the reason for his firing. The president has, however, disputed these claims, saying that he and Mr. Tillerson have a great and will continue to have a great relationship at a press conference held outside the White House today.
Rex and I have been talking about this for a long time. We got along actually quite well, but we disagreed on things. When you look at the Iran deal, I think it's terrible. I guess it was okay.
CIA Director Mike Pompeo was Trump's pick to replace Tillerson as Secretary of State, with Gina Haspel, the Deputy Director of CIA, being nominated to replace Pompeo, becoming the first woman director of the CIA. Mr. Trump has stated his chemistry with Pompeo is why he got the job.
I respect his intellect. I respect the process that we've all gone through together. We have a very good relationship for whatever reason, chemistry, whatever it is. Why do people get along? I've always, right from the beginning, from day one, I've gotten along well with Mike Pompeo.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has praised the work of Mr. Tillerson, saying Rex took the depth of knowledge and experience formed of decades as one of America's leading business executives and adapted it to a world of diplomacy, quickly learning the details of national security imperatives he pursued as Secretary of State. Democrat Senator Chris Coons has stated he doesn't understand why Mr. Trump would fire Tillerson, telling reporters that he chose to dismiss his Secretary of State in a manner more reminiscent of an episode of The Apprentice than the respect he's due for his service at the exact moment that diplomacy is essential to securing some path forward with North Korea. It strikes me as irresponsible. Tillerson has become the 20th casualty from the Trump administration, allowing the storyline for a faltering White House to deepen.
Yesterday, Boris Johnson issued a deadline for the Russian government to prove they were not involved in ordering the poisoning of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter, which took place on the 4th of March. Our correspondent, Chloe Ruderman, has looked into the response of the UK government.
On Sunday 4th of March, former Russian military intelligence officer Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia were poisoned by a military-grade nerve agent in Salisbury. They were found slumped on a park bench near a shopping centre by a passing doctor and nurse. The pair are currently in a critical but stable condition in hospital. Speaking in the House of Commons yesterday, Prime Minister Theresa May stated that experts have identified the nerve agent as a type developed in Russia. She then continued by accusing the Russian government of being involved in the attack.
The government has concluded that it is highly likely that Russia was responsible for the act against Sergei and Yulia Skripal.
British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson demanded an explanation for how a Russian nerve agent was used to poison a former Russian spy on British soil. He has given the Kremlin until midnight tonight to respond to these allegations and hinted that there will be consequences if they fail to do so.
If they can come up with a convincing explanation, then obviously we will want to see full disclosure of that to the Organisation for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons in The Hague. If not, then clearly we will want to be announcing the UK response.
The Russian government have denied direct involvement in the poisoning, and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has criticised the UK for refusing to let Moscow test samples recovered from Salisbury.
As soon as the rumours first started being spread by practically every member of the British government that the substance Skripal was poisoned with came from the Russian Federation, we immediately made an official request to gain access to this substance so that our experts could carry out an analysis.
Alexander Nekrasov, a former Kremlin advisor, has also stated that he thinks putting blame on Russia for the poisoning is unfair.
It's not a clear-cut case. Oh, this has been produced by the Russians, so it means it's the Russians. It is available in other countries. Russian government is not going to respond, simply because what can it say? Putin has already mentioned that, first of all, it's the British government that needs to investigate what happened.
We spoke to Shashank Joshi, a senior fellow at the Royal United Services Institute, who gave us a deeper insight into Theresa May's comments.
It was a very strong statement. It used very stern language, language such as unlawful use of force, which indicates that you've used this almost as an act of warlike aggression. It was designed to give her a little more time to prepare a diplomatic response. She didn't immediately say she would be punishing Russia. She allowed Russia a certain amount of time, 24 hours, to respond. She set very stringent conditions on a Russian response. She made it very clear she believes Russia was responsible, but allowed for the slim possibility that the nerve agent used to attack Sergei Skripal was stolen from the laboratory.
Clearly, this ultimatum is putting pressure on the relationship between UK and Russia. So far, it is unclear as to what will actually happen if there's no response from Russia by midnight tonight, but there will undoubtedly be consequences.
The time is now around 25. Coming up, we have all the latest sporting, weather and travel developments. But first, Leith's only remaining music venue is to close in 2019 to make way for student accommodation and new urban developments. This is just the latest in a string of arts and culture venues shutting down in the city. Reporting on the pub's closure is arts correspondent Rory Gilmer.
Leith's only music venue is set to close to make way for student housing.
Leith Depot, which hosts gigs almost every night of the week, opened less than 3 years ago, but has since become the beating heart of Leith's music scene. The Drum Property Group is the firm behind the scheme, and it plans to work with Edinburgh University to create the accommodation, which it says will also incorporate a hotel, restaurant and cafe. This follows numerous other closures to city centre venues for development, including Silk Nightclub, Studio 24 and Electric Circus. Artist Chris Rutherford, who has done work at the Leith Depot, says that the culture in Edinburgh is being severely undervalued thanks to the council putting renovation and construction first, and as such, pubs and small businesses are suffering.
Do say someone like Edinburgh City Council don't necessarily value creative people unless they are coming from England and paying them money when they come to the festival. They basically think their job's done in August and don't value the creatives that live in Edinburgh at all.
Static Union, a band who are scheduled to perform at the Leith Depot in the coming days, are one of hundreds to have played throughout the years. Drummer Cameron Angus spoke of how small venues are crucial for bands to gain traction in the music industry.
A lot of the venues in kind of Glasgow and Edinburgh, a lot of them are over existing venues, so yeah, it can be quite hard for kind of young bands to kind of make their way through. But, you know, the venues that still exist, they are great and putting on shows all the time. It's the promoters that put shows in them, really pushing through kind of really small bands that are really unknown and getting them kind of support slots, you know, with kind of bigger acts. So, yeah, it is a bit disappointing when you see venues shutting down, but if they're, you know, if they're not bringing in audiences, then that's the issue, I guess.
However, Councillor Gavin Barry, a member of the Housing and Economy Committee, believes that the placement of student accommodation in this area will promote a mixed community with businesses and other residents.
Obviously, like I say, we were seeking a mixed community, so that balance will be something that certainly the Planning Committee will be looking at during their considerations. But remember, we are at pre-planning stage, so basically it's very much an idea. It's out for public consultation at this time.
Edinburgh isn't the only city suffering from closures to venues such as this, as Glasgow's very own Scottish Youth Theatre looks to be shutting down due to budget restrictions. To cover this story, John Gillespie.
For the past 41 years, the Scottish Youth Theatre in Glasgow has helped people gain a foothold in the world of acting. They have regular workshops for everyone from the ages of 3 to 25, and their alumni include Gerard Butler, Karen Gillan and Kate Dickey. However, it is set to close this July after failing to secure the funding it needs from Creative Scotland. The funding applications to the Arts Council exceed its available budget by a third, and as a result they had to cut the £600,000 budget of the Youth Theatre. In response, petitions and protests have begun to urge Creative Scotland to reconsider its decision. Sabrina Baird, mother of a student, began a petition in early March that now has nearly 38,000 signatures, and today, a number of students gathered in Glasgow's George Square to protest. They were led by Ailey Zerabiek.
So Scottish Youth Theatre gives young people a voice where they maybe didn't have a voice before. It gives them the opportunity to be the creative individuals that they are. It encourages them to put their voices out there. So that's why I'm here today doing what I'm doing. I had heard that the funding had been cut, and I was in dismay at that, but the minute I heard that the doors were going to have to be closed, that was the real moment for me when I went, I have to take action. I can't just let this place go without anything being said. Any kind of source location that has any kind of funding would be fantastic. The main mantra today is save SYT, so if in any way it can be saved by anyone, please do so and hear our voices and help us out.
In their response, Creative Scotland released the following statement.
We are disappointed to learn of Scottish Youth Theatre's plans to cease trading later this year. Scottish Youth Theatre applied for regular funding for 2018 to 2021. However, in a competitive process and within the limits of funds available, we were not able to support them through this funding route. But we have been in discussions with them regarding alternative routes to support.
Creative Scotland suggested that Scottish Youth Theatre could also look into other avenues for funding. For example, they may be able to apply for funding on specific theatre projects, and they have also been working to secure funding directly from the Scottish Government in an effort to keep afloat. But for now, the future of the Scottish Youth Theatre is uncertain.
Mark MacDonald held a press conference at Holyrood this afternoon, calling for a second chance regarding allegations of his inappropriate behaviour and sexual harassment within his position at Parliament. Sonia Maguire reports.
Mark MacDonald returns to Parliament today after admitting to inappropriate behaviours towards three women. The MSP for Aberdeen Donside engaged in persistent behaviour including inappropriate and unwanted text messages, unwanted attention and exploiting his position of power. He resigned after his post as childcare minister when the allegations first came to light in November, but only left SNP last week after the party launched a formal investigation into his conduct. Today he returned to Parliament as an independent MSP amid calls for his resignation, including an appeal from First Minister Nicola Sturgeon. Earlier this afternoon, MacDonald attended a press conference where he gave his statement on his future at Parliament.
I apologised profusely and sincerely for any upset that had been caused as a result of that behaviour. Today I'm returning to Parliament, and during the 4 months that I've been absent, I've spent time reflecting carefully on my past behaviour and my future conduct.
Despite his refusal, this has opened up the wider debate of whether there is enough precedent for his resignation. Theo Barclay, author of Fighters and Quitters, Great Political Resignations, speaks more on the process of political resignations.
Well, I'd say that there isn't a precedent for him having to resign as an MSP, although he may feel that's something he wants to do. It's going to be very difficult to see how he can be usefully employed. But the problem is that there are no real provisions, at least in the British Parliament or British local government, to force an elected representative out. So if he wants to stay put until presumably the next election, where he can either be defeated or not stand again, then there's very little to stop him doing that. It's the same position in England, I think. There's no hard and fast rules over whether you have to go. And really, once your party whip has gone, then there's no pressure on him at all, really. He can carry on. It's only his own shame or his own conscience that would cause him to go.
But with one in three women in Parliament reporting sexual harassment, is this system robust enough to solve this reoccurring problem?
Here is our sports correspondent, Gregor Kerr.
Thank you, Laura. Well, it's been a busy first day in Cheltenham for the start of the 2010 festival. Ruby Walsh took first place in the Arco Trophy with his horse Footpad. In the first race of the day, the Supreme Novice Hurdle was won by 9-1 Somerville Boy in thrilling fashion, with Somerville storming down the inside despite struggling over the last two jumps. Former Stoke manager Mark Hughes is the early favourite to replace sacked Southampton manager Maurizio Pellegrino. Celtic's Brendan Rodgers and former Watford manager Marco Silva are also names in discussion for the job. The Argentine sacking came after a run of 1 win in 17 games, with the Saints now 1 point above the relegation zone in 17th place. Former club captain Matt Letizia said that Pellegrino's approach contributed towards the sacking.
You can lay the blame at the manager's door for the way that the team has been set up. There's players out on the football pitch that have got to go and do the business, and unfortunately there's too many this season that haven't been on top of their game.
Manchester United host Sevilla in the Champions League tonight for their second leg tie. The hosts are still the favourites at Old Trafford after leaving Spain with a 0-0 draw in the first leg. The Reds will be without defenders Phil Jones, Daley Blind and Marcus Rojo, while midfielder Paul Pogba is a doubt. United manager Jose Mourinho believes that anything can happen for his side this season.
I think we are not one of the best teams in the competition, but I think when a team arrives in the last 8, anything can happen. I think when you are in the last 16, it looks really, really far.
And finally, Ben Stokes has been ruled out of England's opening test warm-up game with a minor back injury. He has also been stripped of his vice-captaincy role, with James Anderson holding on to the position after taking on the role during the Ashes this winter. That's all from sport. Back to you, Laura.
Edinburgh Zoo have announced that they have suspended their giant panda breeding programme in favour of renovating their enclosure. In the past, their breeding programme has raised concerns and received criticism from the charity One Kind as to whether or not Tian Tian and Yang Guang should have stayed in China. Our reporter, Lewis Robertson, has more.
Edinburgh Zoo has recently announced it will no longer be continuing its breeding programme with giant pandas Tian Tian and Huang Guang. Since 2011, Tian Tian has had 6 failed attempts at producing a panda cub. The pair are on loan from Bicentia Breeding Centre in China at the cost of £640,000 per year. The zoo has been criticised in the past by the animal welfare charity One Kind for their treatment of the pandas. I spoke with One Kind's campaigner and press officer Sarah Moyes about the Edinburgh Zoo's recent announcement.
One kind is hoping that this isn't just going to be a temporary measure and that it will actually be halted for good. There's been several failed attempts now to breed the pandas at Edinburgh Zoo, and we think it's time that she should just be left in peace and be left alone for the rest of their time in Edinburgh. One kind believes that the pandas should have been kept in China rather than being brought over to the UK. They're nothing more than an entertainment in Edinburgh. People flock to see them. People don't generally care about their conservation, otherwise they would have wanted them to stay in China. They're really just used as an entertainment spectacle for the Edinburgh Zoo to make money, and we think the pandas should have remained in their home in China.
We also discussed the legitimacy of Edinburgh Zoo's caring for the pandas.
No, we don't believe that breeding programmes like this are any use. The fact that the pandas have, if they had given birth, the pandas at Edinburgh Zoo, the panda would be in captivity for its whole life. If a breeding programme is going to work, then we want to see the animals released back into the wild. That's what they should be for. They shouldn't be just bred to breed another panda that's just going to be another sort of entertainment spectacle in a zoo. One kind is very much under the impression that this is just a PR stunt by the zoo. For several years now, we've seen many failed attempts, and it just seems like it's another sort of another thing to bring in more money. Obviously, if there was a baby panda at the zoo, people would be flocking from all over the country to see it, and it seems like that's what they care about more than the actual animal itself. If this was an animal that was getting bred to be released into the wild, then, you know, maybe that would be in their best interest, but they are just breeding a panda to be kept in a cage in captivity, which just isn't fair.
Edinburgh Zoo released a statement detailing their hopes for the future of the programme, which we have voiced up.
We will not attempt to breed our giant pandas this year because we want to further assess the incredibly complex and unpredictable breeding process. This pause, which is supported by our giant panda team and other key specialists, will allow us further time to consider the scientific data, our own experiences and those of colleagues around the world, including the latest thinking on giant panda accommodation. We very much hope Tian Tian has a cub in the future and will be thrilled if this happens. Even without breeding success as yet, RZSS is playing a crucial role in safeguarding this magnificent species by helping fund conservation projects in China alongside international partners. These projects are critical, with fewer than 2,000 giant pandas in the wild.
Edinburgh Zoo are hopeful of resuming the programme in the future after the panda's enclosure has been renovated. If successful, the zoo could potentially bring £30 million to Edinburgh's economy.
Now for the travel and weather updates. Here's Anne Gillen.
There are significant travel disruptions due to roadworks at Western Corner in the Murrayfield area, and there is a closure on the A7 from the roads A698 to A708. We are looking at slightly breezy early evening with light clouds and sunny intervals with a slight chance of rain.
Thank you, Anne. And now a summary of the headlines. An agreement has been reached between university officials and lecturer leaders over their pension dispute. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, has delivered his spring statement from the House of Commons this afternoon. The Edinburgh Zoo's giant panda breeding programme has been suspended for at least a year after failing five times to produce cubs. That's all from the Radio Energy News programme. We'll be back at 6 o'clock for the next update.
Radio Energy. The sound of students.